This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Hello everyone and welcome back to Borscht Club. How are you today? I hope your day's been kind to you. Today I decided to try something new. I have invited a co-host. Please welcome Olena Hrab. I thought, well, two heads are better than one and definitely more fun. So today Olena and I will be talking about stereotypes about Ukrainians. I searched the internet to see what non-Ukrainians say about us. Picked around 20 of the most interesting ones, though I have a feeling we won't manage to cover them all, but that's fine. We will continue in the next episodes. If you have also heard something curious about Ukrainians and you are not sure if it's true, send us a message. We will gladly tell you how it really is. You can find us on Facebook. Look for Borscht NZ. Follow us, write to us, and share what you'd like to hear next. Welcome, Olena. Let's start. Hello. Hi, guys. How are you? Today, for example, we will talk about stereotypes about Ukrainians. I have a list of them, and I probably will read one, and then we will discuss what do you think of them, what I think of them.
Yeah.
Let's start. These stereotypes, based on what I found in the internet, not only from New Zealanders, but from any not Ukrainians who said something about Ukrainians. So, Ukrainians are poor and backward.
And backwater?
Backward. Backward. Like, vitstali.
Ah, okay. Oh, okay. What do I think about that?
Yes, what do you think about that? Do we really poor and
we
backward?
Poor and backward. The topic is also, you know, like my style of explaining is a little bit of, in a style of Sherlock Holmes, right? Like I like to dig deep in what is the problem is. Because of course, the biggest problem is this perception, as you said, because these are stereotypes. And you have said that this is the Western view. And I can explain why Western countries have this stereotype. It goes very far, and it goes long ago into history, primarily into the division of church, as we would be very surprised to know. Division of Christian church into Catholic and Orthodox. Because the fact is that... So there was one church, which was, I mean, at that point, it was just Christian church. And that was the seat of this was in Constantinople, which is now Turkey, Istanbul. So after the fall of Rome, right, the church moved to Constantinople and the Christianity developed under the Emperor Constantine. And Ukraine at that point actually accepted Christianity in the Middle Ages. When there were Middle Ages in Europe, we were sort of started to be Christian because we were very close to Constantinople, and Orthodox and Christianity was the sort of the most fashionable religion of those times. And so what happened is that I think it was a Nikaean Nikaisky Sobor, Nikaean how do you say that? Meeting, I'd say, well, church meeting, where there was a basic disagreement whether Jesus Christ was God, or Jesus Christ was a human. And on that basis, the churches has divided into Catholic and Orthodox. And then they were at war between themselves. And what became Catholic Church became Western European Church. And the main argument of the Western European Church was that Eastern Church, which was Orthodox, is backwater, poor backwater backers, stupid people, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so it was kind of like that it was non-progressive. And, but that was a church argument. And then for the same thing that the Orthodoxy was, you know, kind of like considering the Western churches as heretics. And because everything that we know that came to us in a form of books from the Middle Ages was primarily church communication. You know, there was no fiction or literature because you need to write things, you know, and there was no printer as such. So everything that was written in the church by the church. And so the books that we can read is basically this stretch between the Catholic and Orthodox Church, where one and the other was bickering. And so when the Western, so because Western science didn't have access to the Eastern literature, they would know that we have arguments against that too. But primarily, so the reason is, deep inside, is that Western Church, from a very beginning of this division, was considered the Eastern Church to be backwatered and very ancient, uneducated, and whatever it is that you've got. And we being a part of that sort of tradition as a religion as well, got covered by that veil. So that's my understanding and what that partial that what explanation that I see of the of this belief. So this belief is not it does not correspond to a reality. It's just something that has been brought from a very old Facebook quarrel.
Okay, you really dig very, very deep.
I dig deep, yeah.
Let's maybe come back to nowadays. Well, maybe it is from the Soviet Union times when the other world can see Ukrainians as well as others from the Soviet Union, like really poor and like it was. But now, when a lot of Ukrainians started to flee from war to European countries, to United States of America, to Canada, and people were surprised that they have iPhones, for example, or some really good cars, or, I don't know, they have money. They're not poor, they just flee from war. So it's very different. What do you think, why we have this stereotype that Ukrainians are very poor? I mean, nowadays, not deep in history.
Okay.
Let's try to be more grounded.
I don't know. Because I think there's a different understanding of rich and poor, probably. It's a difficult dilemma. I mean, in comparison, when we look at the... we, as you say, in Ukraine, people own a lot of properties. And this was one of the things that when people came abroad as refugees, and I remember that when I was in Germany, that you had to declare, you know, your belongings. And some of the people who would show up, because they were fleeing from war, they were declaring like two houses, you know, in Ukraine. And the German tax authorities was just, it's, you know, the jaw dropped in the fact that, you know, these people were owning land and properties. And I think this is something that New Zealanders could appreciate, because if you own the land, you are definitely not poor. But I think it came, of course, as part of the, as you said, after the Soviet Union, yeah, we had people who were going abroad. So primarily, people who were fleeing USSR probably were not very rich in the sense that USSR, you know, we were just not having private properties. Everyone was poor because it was fashionable. You know, it was something that in the USSR was actually cultivated, you know, that because it was a communist country where everything belongs to the state, so nothing belongs to you. And then suddenly you go into a capitalist country where you kind of own nothing, you know, and when people talk to you, and you look poor to them to a certain extent. And of course, the second thing, when people go abroad, they have to start a new life as well. And So in the beginning, of course, probably a lot of money go into settling, trying to settle down. But then there are a lot of cases where people are very well. So we know a lot of people of Ukrainian descent who've done really, really well, you know, who are the owners of different startups and businesses. And, you know, like Steve Wozniak, I think, has Ukrainian origin. A lot of people in IT industry. The perception, and also I think in the beginning was a lot of people who were going to earn money. And I have to say that it is true, but I think it's in every society, whenever I travel, is that after the Iron Curtain fallen, so everyone had to earn their own living as opposite to this socialist thing that we used to have. And a lot of people went abroad in search of actually earnings. And then, of course, people were working as cleaners, nannies, and, you know, and I don't think this is shameful, actually. I think this was the way that, okay, let's blame the Russians.
That's always a good idea.
Yeah, because we were under the USSR. And so we didn't sort of, you know, like things were taking off us. There's a lot of things that are in Moscow. So it was similar, like you have, if Nazi would ever won the Second World War and things were being taken of people, you know. And so I think we were robbed, essentially, of a lot of things. And when people were going abroad and they had to, they actually were, you know, going to probably the least paid jobs, you know, because of the language and of all the other things. And so the perception, of course, was that they represented the country. And now this war showed, when people actually went to Europe, that country changed tremendously. That people, first of all, for example, the numbers are showing at the moment that Poland GDP grew, I think, if I'm not mistaken, by 18%, just because of the Ukrainians. And so the actual GDP and profit that the Polish economy now receives from the fact that Ukrainians are temporarily moved to Poland and working there is actually more, probably, or exactly the same amount that we receive in some sort of form of, you know, assistance. I think we have changed. I think the perception was perhaps to start with like that, but things have changed.
Okay, let's go further. So the next one is, well, it's pretty interesting because it says all Ukrainians, well, Ukrainians eat lard, salo, and borscht every day. It's funny because I just cooked the 10-liter pot of borscht and my stepson, he can eat borscht every day. So I would say it's not a stereotype, and unfortunately we cannot find lard in New Zealand, so yeah, it's a shame, but it's not a stereotype. When did you eat borscht last time?
Oh, that's a good question, because we in our family, we eat a different dish. We don't eat so much borscht, but my daughter is really into bouillon, which is a chicken soup. This is something in our family that guy, like my grandmother cooked the clear chicken broth, really. And then my father also, and then me now, and my daughter is completely hooked up on that. She eats that every single day. She would eat a clear chicken broth. And that is a very rich protein dish that is apparently New Zealand sold in the way of protein powder for a lot of money in shops. And I just cook it from scratch. Whether the stereotypes of Ukrainian is borscht, well, we do.
Don't we?
Actually, yes. Maybe that's true.
How many recipes of borscht do you know? How many different borscht did you try?
I've tried a lot of borscht, yes, because every one that you would visit, you know, would have their own borscht. Like, you have your own borscht now, and that would be different from my borscht or Marika has a borscht, or anyone else. Even every single Ukrainian in New Zealand have their own borscht.
So. How do you cook your borscht?
My borscht is probably not as thick sort of thing. I probably cook like my mother cooked the borscht. Would be with white beans a little bit, and that would be. But I wouldn't put, like, for example, some people put the kvass, the beetroot kvass.
And I never heard about that.
Yes,
I heard that in Odessa they cook borscht with fish.
Oh my gosh, no, I haven't.
Exactly. Yes. So, yeah, but I never heard about beetroot kvass.
Beetroot kvass. Yeah, you have to talk to Marika Hase. She will tell you more about that. It's, a, I think, oh, I know. This is quite a thing. In Galicia, in Western Ukraine, the borscht with beetroot kvass is a thing because it's fermented. It's fermented borscht and it's very clear. So it doesn't have a lot of vegetables. It does have vegetables in it, obviously, but it does not have so many, like, cut vegetables. But primarily, my borscht would be thicker. Like, I would not use a kvass.
The spoon must stand in borscht. Yeah.
it's quite a thick sort of soup. But yes, borscht is good to eat every day together with lard. Like, it's, I think, I don't think it's stereotype. I think it's truth.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. It's not a stereotype. Let's move further.
It's possible. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong. Yeah. And the program calls Borscht Club. Well, why is it? I have no idea. Maybe because, yeah, we eat borscht every day. Yes.
It's true.
Okay. Everyone in Ukraine speaks Russian.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a very old stereotype.
It's a very old stereotype, and it's a stereotype. We have this problem, and it's, again, let's blame Russians and Soviet Union, because we were under Soviet Union for 72 years, and all of us were forced to learn Russian and to speak Russian, and unfortunately, we can speak Russian. We know this language. We prefer not to, but we, unfortunately, can understand Russian.
Our generation.
Our generation. Yeah, yeah. Our generation of our children, they probably will not understand Russian, not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have this problem that Russia has huge impact on some parts of Ukraine and some people. I think before the war started in 2014, we had Russian TV programs on our TV, and it was quite normal, and nobody complained about that. Well, somebody complained, but not a lot of people. Yeah, and now more and more people started to speak Ukrainian and only Ukrainian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in Ukraine, official language is Ukrainian, and we speak Ukrainian, and Ukrainian language is quite different from Russian language, and Russians cannot understand us.
Yes.
We speak Ukrainian. Yeah. We can understand them, but they cannot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, when it says that this is the same language, if you speak Ukrainian to Russian, they do not understand. It's very funny. When they say, oh, it's the same language as Russian, and then, but you don't understand it. It's very funny. This is the language, as you probably would agree, it just was a part of politics. Really, because Slavic languages, there are plenty of them, and they come from Greek language. We know that. So there's Cyrillic language was developed by the Greek monks to spread the Bible in the Balkans and the Eastern Europe. And so all the Balkan sort of countries and the Eastern European countries have this, you know, Cyrillic language. And where it came from, it's funnily, it's from Bulgaria. So Russia just became, none of that actually comes from Russia, because Russia is probably the last country that has been formed in that region, right? Because so we have Bulgaria, also like Armenia, you know, Balkan countries were there, including Ukraine was there before. So Bulgaria was the main place where Christianity spread into Balkans and Eastern Europe, and Bulgarian language actually would be considered the one that, if we were to learn some common Slavic language, that would be Bulgarian.
Great. Another stereotype. Ukrainians are always protesting. Well, it's like with borscht. Maybe it's not a stereotype. Because, yeah, we had only in this century, we had... Let's say not about century, but the period when Ukraine became independent. How many revolutions did we have? Revolutions?
The orange?
Orange revolution, revolution on
of the
granite.
On granite is before the orange one.
It was before orange one. Then revolution Maidan. Of dignity.
Maidan.
Yeah, Maidan. Three. Yeah, and it's only...
Three. No?
It's only three. Yeah, but we had some protests in between. So always when something happens, when people are not happy with our authorities, they go outside and protest. Yeah.
But French are the same. If you, like in France, for example, you know, there's always, if you look at the news, people are paying attention. But I think this was, sorry, I interrupted you, but I think this was so kind of used against us, again, as a part of Russian propaganda. Because, for example, if you look at other European countries, it's normal to protest.
Yeah.
If you're not happy. Like, look at the French. You know, they are much more violent when they protest. Yeah. You know, they burn cars and throw things away. And we are normally more peaceful when we are protesting, except when people really piss us off, especially government.
And here we also are protesting. For example, every Saturday at 12 in the Octagon. If you want, you can join us, please. We would be happy to see you and to share our ideas and thoughts and explain what's happening in Ukraine and why we are there every Saturday in the Octagon, and the same is in the other cities of New Zealand. So, yeah, Ukrainians are always protesting. Well, let's stick it as a not.
Not a stereotype, is it? But as I say, this is a very democratic thing to do. And if you look at other European countries, you would find that. In New Zealand, for example, if you have people who are, you know, you have strikes here, like the recently there was a teacher strikes, doctor strikes, if you think that you've been treated unfairly, you strike. So I don't think this is something stereotypical of us, particularly. I think it's just a normal reaction of in democratic country. So I think it has been used as kind of a in a negative way against us, not by us, it's just by the Russians who, because you know, Russian government wants people. I think our image was used kind of by Russians to frighten their own population, going like, oh, if you. Because it's such a stability, you know, we are a dictatorship. And so, you know, you will have a stable lifestyle without needing to have a demonstration. Because look at the Ukrainians who are protesting all the time. And we're not protesting all the time. I would say we are active political citizens in comparison to people in, for example, in non-democratic countries who unfortunately don't have such opportunity, even if they would want.
I'm searching for another one. I really love this one, but we don't have time to discuss this. But we will discuss that next time, that Ukrainian culture is just a branch of Russian culture.
It is a long one.
It's a long one. And I think we will talk about that next time. We really need to talk about that. Yeah, because it is a stereotype and we need to discuss that. I don't want to leave it. Yeah.
Really? Well, first of all, thank you very much, Ola, for this very wonderful opportunity and invitation. I'm really pleased that, you know, you're incredibly interesting conversation with you all the time. And what we are trying to do, I think, from my opinion, we are just trying to share our conversation with more people and see if you guys have any questions or you would like us to talk about something in particular that maybe, you know, about any other stereotypes or particular questions of how people live or something else. I think we'd be happy to talk about it. And as you see, we're quite honest. So we think it's also fun to listen to us. Join us and let us know what you think.
We have a page on Facebook. It calls Borsch and Z. So please go there, sign in, and let us know what you think. Because I think we will continue this format.
Maybe we will have the, I mean, maybe Borsch will become a staple dish in New Zealand restaurants because we can share some recipes.
Yeah, we already did that. We already did that in previous program. I think it was the second one where I shared my recipe of Borsch.
Of course, because your recipe of Borsch is in the book.
Yes.
It's in the cookbook here in New Zealand.
Yes. And that's all for today's episode of Borsch Club. We didn't get through all the stereotypes, but that's fine. We are not in a rush. Some myths deserve a whole episode of their own. Big thanks to my co-host Olena Hrab for keeping me company and for all the laughs. And thank you, our listeners, for spending this time with us. If you enjoyed today's talk, follow Borsch and Z on Facebook. Leave a comment, share your thoughts, or send us the wildest thing you have ever heard about Ukrainians. We might read it out next time.
take care of yourself, stay curious, and don't believe everything the internet tells you. See you, or rather hear you, or rather you hear me in the next episode of Borscht Club. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host, Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.